I declare the special meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. The agenda comprises one report from management. Given that this is a special meeting of the Future Melbourne Committee, in accordance with Council's conduct of meetings local law, unless all councillors are present and unanimously agree to deal with another matter, only the business specified in the notice is to be transacted. Apologies have been received from councillors Pinder Mortimer and Watts. If any councillor has either direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. As of today, the following submissions were received in relation to agenda item 3.1, submissions received on the draft 2016-17 annual plan and budget. The following people have addressed the committee in relation to this agenda item at previous Future Melbourne committees, Clem Newton-Brown and Malcolm Rest. We have requests to speak at this meeting from Jeff Leach, Chris Thrum, Peter Topping, Rachel Riley, Annette Sloan, John Blawonski, Tony Penner and Sherry Brunhout, and items of correspondence from Nick Hoffman, Clem Newton-Brown, Jeff Leach, Des Aldridge, Sam Moffin, Angela Williams, George Mercado, Michelle Curry, Bart Spiegan, Fleur Ribbons, Malcolm Rest, Tom Burr, Chris Thrum, Craig Turner, Peter Topping, Rachel Riley, Lucy Firth, Dawn Jones, Janine Stanfield, Michelle Stiles, Annette Sloan, John Blawonski and Tony Penner. I advise submitters you have 3 minutes to address the committee and we stick to that 3 minute time limit. Please refer to the counter on the wall behind me. Beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining. Another beep sounds to signal the time allocated is finished. I call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of the Chair in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There is one report for management for consideration under the Finance and Governance portfolio. That's agenda item 3.1, which is the submissions received on the draft 2016-17 annual plan and budget. Now, agenda item 3.1 will be dealt with in two parts tonight. Part one will consider the submission from ACME, for which the Lord Mayor has a conflict of interest, and the Lord Mayor will then return for discussion and decision on the rest of the submissions. I now call on our CFO, Phu Nguyen, to make a brief presentation to the committee.
Good evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. The purpose of this evening's report is to consider submissions in response to the proposed 2016-17 annual plan and budget in accordance with requirements under the Local Government Act. The draft annual plan and budget was made available for public comment and submissions from the period of 6th of May to the 3rd of June 2016. And at the conclusion of that submission period, we'd received just over 20 verbal or written submissions. There was one further submission that was received after the cut-off date from the Melbourne City Mission, which has been distributed to councillors but wasn't included in the papers. And a copy of the submissions received by letter and relevant extracts from online submissions are attached to the report. In addition to the public submissions received, some changes are being recommended by management and also as a result of council resolutions and administrative changes since the proposed draft annual plan and budget was made available to the public. You'll note in the report that there are management recommendations in response to each of those submissions, councillors. And should the committee accept management's recommendations, this would result in a revised underlying surplus of $14.25 million and a modest reduction to the overall capital works program of $720,000. I commend the recommendation contained in the report.
Thanks, Phu. Any questions for Phu, councillors? Okay, thanks very much, Phu. I'd now like to call on our first submitter, who is Jeff Leach. Jeff, you've got 3 minutes and you'll get the usual warning beep after two.
One of the activities I engage in is swimming. And in the summer, I swim at the North Melbourne Pool, great facility. In the winter, when the North Melbourne pool was closed, I go to Kensington. There's also a squad that swims at North Melbourne and at Kensington in the winter. Essentially, what I'm asking for, there's a problem at the Kensington pool, first world problem. The water is too hot for lap swimmers. It gets up to 30 degrees, consistently 30 degrees or above, and the recommended temperature for lap swimming, aerobic lap swimming, is 25 to 28 degrees. And 30 degrees for lap swimming can be unsafe, in fact. There's a problem with the plant and the heating and filtration facility at the Kensington pool, where the toddler's pool and the main lap pool have the water mixed when it goes through the plant. As a consequence, they can't run the two pools, the toddler's pool and the main lap pool, at independent temperatures. And there's been new guidelines issued that require toddler's pools to be 32-ish degrees. That's drawn the lap pool's temperature up to around 30 degrees instead of the normal lap swim temperature of about 28 degrees. Now, we're only talking 2 degrees. Doesn't seem, you know, what's the big deal? Well, for swimming, it matters a lot. Okay, I'm down here speaking largely on my own behalf, but I'm also here, and there's 8 other submitters, I believe, who have backed this request from the largely from the swim squad. I've seen the, and this is a photo of a billboard that's in the pool showing the lap pool temperature and the toddler's pool temperature, and you can see 31 and 30 degrees. I've seen the recommendation for management. I'm down here speaking to my submission because I thought that was a courteous thing to do. But I'm also down here to argue against the management recommendation. I'd like to see this prioritised a bit higher rather than just a $100,000 initial investigation. My understanding, talking to the engineers and the pool management, the pool operations management, is that it could be quite cheap, in fact, there's a possibility it could be quite cheap to undertake the works necessary, and that instead of having this two-phase approach where actually addressing the problem gets pushed off to some general upgrade of the entire Kensington facility, that the funds get allocated to do the job now in the existing plant room instead of waiting for some general maybe rejig of the whole facility. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Councillor Leppett, you have a question.
It's his fault for coming along, but while we have Mr. Porteous here, can I ask if he's available to respond to the suggestion that there is a quick and cheap option available that management hasn't considered in the report?
Thank you. Just for the audio, Graham, I'll get... Jeff, you might take a seat. Thanks.
Jeff is quite correct in that there is a single body of water at Kensington Pool, which means that we can only heat one body at the water at a higher temperature. In relation to a cheap fix, I'm afraid that I'm not sure where that information has come from, but it's not correct. It would be quite extensive, and any future design that we would do would take into account a plant that would actually do more than just heat the pool. It would actually encompass the entire building. We'd be looking at energy savings, green initiatives, sustainability initiatives that would be able to use on that plant. The Carlton Baths plant was, which was recently commissioned, was in the order of $300,000 to $500,000 as part of the overall project. I can't imagine that this would be any cheaper than that, and if anything, it would probably be a little bit more expensive. There's no doubt there's an issue with the plant, but it's a question of balancing the needs of the swim squad versus the needs of the swim squad versus the lap squad versus our swim school. Our swim school numbers are significantly above the numbers with the lap squad. We're talking about 35,000 individual swim lessons a year, and so it's a really challenging one trying to balance it all. But it certainly wouldn't be cheap.
Can I follow up there, Graham? Is it right? We haven't got a hydrotherapy pool there, and hydrotherapy pools should be running at around 35. So is that also part of the trade-off as to where you set the temperature?
We don't have hydrotherapy there. Ideally, you would run each of your pools on independent plant, and then you can modify the temperatures according to what it is that's required. Kensington doesn't have that at the moment. In any future upgrade, we would want to do that, but your hydrotherapy is actually quite high, significantly higher.
Any other questions for Graham? All right, thanks, Graham. Let me take a seat. Now call on Chris Thrum. Chris, you've got 180 seconds.
Thank you, Councillor Main. Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town, I'd like to commend and applaud the council staff for all the phenomenal work that they've put into this report. Just key items that I'd like to highlight. I'd like to thank Melbourne City Council for the support they give to Melbourne musicians through the course of the year, and in particular to Melbourne Music Week. It's phenomenal the support that they give to musicians, and again I'd reiterate to councillors and to management that musicians are very thankful for the tireless work and support that council provides to the musician and the musical community. And as I said, like Melbourne Music Week is like a, you know, an event that is just going to get bigger and stronger. Which leads me on to Melbourne Fashion Week. That's another crucial platform that the Melbourne City Council provides for the creative industry in Melbourne, for designers, aspiring designers, for textile workers and what have you. It's a beacon and a highlight for the fashion industry to have such a great support from Melbourne City Council for the fashion industry. So again, I'm sure that the fashion industry are very thankful for that kind of support that is provided. Again, the great work also too I'd like to highlight for protecting the biodiversity of Melbourne. It's phenomenal the work that councillors have put in, travelling overseas to important forums and conferences, and the work that councillors provide too to provide the opportunities for researchers to sort of be focused on what's essential for to protect our biodiversity from what's in the land, the water and the air, the critters, the birds and all the creatures. And one of those things that I think should be highlighted is like the relationship that Melbourne City Council staff have to the biosphere and to protect the biodiversity. I think if management highlight to the staff that you're part of the team to help protect the biodiversity, that will enhance the performance of Melbourne City Council. And also too, I think in that regard, it should be good to have a continued strong relationship with the Royal Botanic Gardens. Skateboarding community too, I would emphasise that the skateboarding community appreciates all the work that Melbourne City Council do to have a strong relationship with the skateboarding community. And in conclusion, again, I'd like to emphasise it's very important that councillors and council officers travel overseas. We are an international city and we have to have strong representation overseas. To have a sophisticated and nuanced approach to all the problems and challenges in the 21st century, it is essential that the Lord Mayor and councillors and officers do travel overseas and improve the knowledge base of the City of Melbourne.
Thanks, Chris. Colleagues, any questions for Chris? Okay, thanks, Chris. Appreciate your submission. I'd like to call on Rachel Riley. Is Rachel here? No? Okay. Rachel can reserve her right to speak in absentia and go at the end. Annette Sloan. Is Annette here? Okay, we're batting down. John Blewonski. John, you've got the 3 minutes with the buzzer at two.
Councillor Main, Lord Mayor and councillors, thank you for the opportunity tonight to speak to the Vincent Kerr submission seeking a $2 million capital grant towards the redevelopment of Vincent Kerr's Osnham House and Osnham Community Centre. I realise that an application of this nature is not insignificant in terms of a submission, but also recognise at the same time that solving homelessness is not solely the responsibility of the city. To that end, what we're asking in our submission is that Council consider the request as an opportunity to join a fantastic partnership between Vincent Kerr, the State Government, St Vincent de Paul Society, our philanthropic partners, corporate and community volunteers, and the broader sector through an initiative which will impact on homelessness here in Melbourne. This project is perfectly aligned to the Council's stated commitment to supporting inclusivity, innovation, and create a safe and healthy, valued community. The redevelopment will provide an enduring legacy of a shared vision for supporting men and women in our city, those who are living on the edge, in crisis, a group severely impacted by homelessness, arguably those most in need of our support. Homes for People emphasises that housing is one of the broadest and most complex issues facing our city, and that it plays an integral role in people's well-being and access to a sense of community. The $43 million redevelopment project therefore provides a tangible and cost-effective opportunity for the City of Melbourne to join a partnership committed to addressing homelessness in Melbourne. As described in our submission, once completed, the key components of the facility, which will be delivered within the next 18 months, will increase capacity here in the city for the disadvantage of 71 dwellings. Of the 134 short, medium and long-term accommodation units, 25 will be available to people over the age of 50 who have a chronic history of homelessness. Alongside the accommodation, the redevelopment will support 250 people each day through a homelessness resource centre. They will benefit from a drop-in program, meals, which are currently being served at 150 a day, showers, laundry facilities, housing information, IT access, material aid through Vinnies, and a significant on-site allied health services, including dentistry, physiotherapy, podiatry, a GP service. Finally, this facility will have a Services Connect facility, which will provide an opportunity for rough sleepers to engage actively with staff. I believe it would be a missed opportunity if Council could not provide some level of support to this vision. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Some questions, starting with Councillor Ong.
Thanks for the presentation, John. Commend Vincent Kay on his work. Because the redevelopment proposal is now considered a life application, it introduces a complication of bringing this to us, because then it would then conflict the evaluation of the planning application. So I thank you for that. I think it's a complication from the planning perspective.
I acknowledge that. Thank you.
Lord Mayor.
John, thank you again, and congratulations on what I know will be a great redevelopment. I recall reading that the Lord Mayor's Charitable Foundation has made a contribution as well. How much was that from them?
Yes, we approached them for a grant of $1 million, which they provided initial $600,000, and if we can bring the project together, they are confident being able to support us with the balance of $400,000.
I'm very happy to support your application to the LMCF.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, councillors? Okay, all right, John.
Thank you.
Now, they're called Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. You know the drill.
Councillor Main, Lord Mayor, councillors. We, in general, we understand the budget. There's a lot of competing interests, etc., and overall, it's a good budget. There are some concerns that we have as South Bank and South Bank centric with the budget, and particularly those concerns are really geared around the public open space, green space, etc. It's nice to see that we have the money that's allocated for the South Bank Boulevard project, but I'd like to remind this council that this council first started discussing that with the residents in 2005, 11 years ago, and we're only just starting to see that happen now. The City Road Master Plan, I understand that that's being adopted next week. That's positive. I understand that there's money allocated from the open space pool to get that underway, so we are excited to see that and to see it continue. Of particular concern, though, is, you know, like I said earlier, our public open space. We have a real opportunity with the Boyd site to secure some more public open space for South Bank. We've seen in the 2008 structure plan that, yes, there's this wonderful pie-in-the-sky idea of covering in the tunnel entry there and providing all that space to us, but let's be honest. What's the chance of that actually happening? That's in the 2008 structure plan. This council hasn't even costed it. At what stage would that likely to come to fruition? That's if it comes to fruition. Here we have Boyd Park, and I understand the reasons why this council wants to develop that and offer the third of the side of the block, partly to fund the investment that they've made on that site. But from the residents' perspective, it's disheartening to know that we have a population currently of around 15,000, projected to be anywhere in the vicinity of 25,000 plus in the not-too-distant future. We see the investment this council makes in Docklands of $22 million in their community facilities. While they need the facilities, an investment needs to be made in comparison to the investment that this council will be making into the community's facilities of South Bank, which I must add are about a quarter of the size of that of Docklands, will be a pittance. So I suppose I could say going forward, we just really need this council to really be focusing on the needs of South Bank, in particular with the public open space, and we have a real opportunity here with that block of leaving that as public open space and really giving something back to the community. That block is vital in terms of its location, right next to one of the most dense blocks of residential living, I think, in Australia. And there's nowhere that anyone can walk to currently to use public open space that's within, according to the open space strategy, that's within reasonable walking distance, or reasonable access, I should say. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Any questions for Tony? Okay, thanks for your submission, Tony. Now I'd like to call on our final submitter, who's Sheridan Brunhout from Melbourne City Mission.
Peter Topping. Do you have him? We might have withdrawn.
Councillor Main, Lord Mayor and councillors, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. Melbourne City Mission's request for support of $1.5 million may seem a little out of the blue, so let me take a minute just to walk you through how that's come about. Council has supported Front Yard Youth Services since it began in 1989 in response to the rise of youth homelessness in the CBD. Back in 2011, Council supported Melbourne City Mission via a grant to develop a 10-year strategic plan for Front Yard, and that was in response to a growth in youth homelessness in the CBD and a change in the dynamics of how young people were experiencing youth homelessness. That 2011 plan identified a key inhibitor for addressing youth homelessness in the CBD, and that inhibitor was the lack of affordable or crisis accommodation. Currently, there is no crisis accommodation for young people in your municipality at all. In fact, the last crisis accommodation that was built within the broader Melbourne area was back in 1994. That's 22 years ago. So we've been working with Council since 2011 to advocate for a crisis accommodation facility in the CBD. Last year, Melbourne City Mission worked with Council and other stakeholders to develop a business plan for a youth refuge in the CBD. The key elements of that proposal are in the submission that I have submitted. However, in short, they include a 24-bed crisis refuge staffed 24/7. This does not currently exist in the CBD. It includes youth outreach team out on the street every single night of the week in Melbourne. That currently doesn't exist. It includes 2 years post-refuge support. So when we help young people to move back to their communities, back to the suburbs, we support them to make sure they don't return to city-based homelessness. And it also includes a specialist youth mental health and drug and alcohol program, which doesn't currently exist in the city. These services will be an absolute game changer for young people experiencing homelessness in the CBD. The numbers of youth homelessness in the CBD are not irretractable, well, not yet at least. This service will ensure that young people who are experiencing homelessness in the CBD don't grow up to be adults experiencing homelessness in the CBD. The service is financially supported by the state government, but it requires more than the state government to solve a wicked issue like homelessness. It requires not-for-profits like Melbourne City Mission to be working in partnership with council, with state government, with philanthropy and with corporates and the general community. The state government are supporting this development by supporting half of the $6.8 million capital cost and all of the annual operating costs, which is $40 million over 10 years. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheridan. Councillors, any questions? Sheridan, can I ask? Councillor Foster. Okay. Obviously, one of the responses, certainly to John's early proposal, is the precedent question for council. It generally tends to be a state or federal responsibility. Can you make the case as to why we should set a precedent, which is a sort of a capital grant into a third-party physical asset? Obviously, we've historically funded research and some operating, but it's that capital bricks and mortar grant, which is the sort of the unusual one for council. So I just invite you to tell us why we should set that precedent.
Capital is an issue, I guess, but particularly for any local council, but particularly for City of Melbourne. The issue is that in order to build a crisis accommodation facility in the CBD, the cost of land is so expensive in this municipality as opposed to others that it becomes quite restrictive. If you leave it to organisations like Melbourne City Mission to bear the cost of that alone, it's not going to happen in your municipality. We can't do it. So what we've done in the past is in acknowledging that councils don't often make capital grants, they do, but certainly not on properties that they don't own. Where we've worked in the past is being able to issue caveats against the land. So Melbourne City Mission owns that site. DHS are making a capital grant against that site, a property that they also do not own, except they're putting a caveat on that to express an interest in that property. Should that property be used for a purpose other than its intended purpose, that interest would then be payable back to the Department of Human Services, and I would argue that that would be an option that we would be looking to for council as well.
Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Chair. Sherry, thanks for your presentation. I was actually going to ask a similar question, but I think you've covered it on the issue of capital. It appears the state government has found a way around that, so it's something we could give consideration to, no doubt. My other question, though, was probably a more practical one, and that is, with such scant and limited resources devoted to youth homelessness across the city currently, how does your organisation and others performing similar work cope at the moment without a facility like this available to them? What do you do with homeless young people?
So at the moment, Front Yard is the largest youth homelessness service in the state. It sees about 3 out of 4 homeless young people in Victoria come through that service. So it's incredibly high volume service, either on the phones or in person. At the moment, about 2/3 of young people that are seeking somewhere to stay that night are not getting a supported accommodation response. Now, for young people, that means a youth refuge or somewhere where they've got a youth worker who can work with them on the issues that have led them into homelessness and to start turning that around for them. For young people that we can't give a supported accommodation response to, we often end up buying, say, backpacker accommodation or cheap hotels. So Melbourne City Mission is spending about $150,000 per year on pretty dodgy accommodation, to be honest. At the moment, we're looking at this youth refuge. We'll be looking at not the young people who need to go back and live with their communities. Those young people will continue to use those resources out in the community. The young people that we're talking about, this 24-bed refuge, are for young people who are bolted on to homelessness in the CBD. So these are young people who have a street mum and a street dad and often a street uncle who's helping them out with drugs or alcohol. These are young people who make their normal adolescent attachments to people that we don't want them to be attaching to at all. A very specialised group of young people. Yeah.
Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for that presentation, Sheridan. I think City Mission does a lot of great work for the youth. I think the city has been working closely with City Mission for a long time with what you have there, King Street.
Yes.
I raised the same issue as before, because when you're talking about building 3 stories off top of a building, that means it has to come in as an application to the City of Melbourne for approval, which in this situation, it conflicts us again in the sense that if we have given support, it implies that we actually support the whole thing while trying to evaluate an application that's yet to come. As compared to Vincent Care, the application just arrived a few days ago. The other point is that we haven't actually had a recommendation or even commentary back from management as to how do we deal with this. So I think we still need to think a bit about this. But from your, do you understand our complication?
We do. Yes.
Okay. Any other questions, councillors? Okay. Thanks, Sheridan. Appreciate you coming along. I think I might have missed Peter Topping before. Is Peter here? No. Okay.
Anyone missed?
Anyone else want to speak? Okay. All right. I'd now like to, as I signalled earlier, we're going to deal with this in two pieces. So I'd like to first move a motion that relates to the ACME submission, which should appear on the screen shortly.
Thanks, Chair. I'll declare a conflict of interest on the basis of an indirect interest under very close association. Thank you.
Okay, so I move that motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Thanks, Lord Mayor. Deputy Lord Mayor, I'm going to turn off the Lord Mayor's mic. As the Lord Mayor stated, the Lady Mayoress is the Senior Executive at ACME, so he has a conflict of interest. So this is just dealing with their submission about some potential works and upgrades on the Flinders Street frontage to Fed Square, where ACME is a key tenant. And we've officers have prepared a very detailed resolution here, which explains that we're not going to be leaping into funding the request directly, but we are undertaking to have a good solid look at it through the City Design Studio in the next financial year. So that's the proposed officer response to the ACME submission, the independent officer response, and I'm happy to support that. The seconder, like to speak? Anyone else like to speak on this item? We'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Any against? Declare that carried unanimously, and we'll invite the Lord Mayor back in. Okay, we now get to item 3.1, part 2, and I'm happy to move a motion, which will appear on the screen, which is similar to what was in the papers but excises the ACME motion. So I'll move that. Is there a seconder for that? Sorry, and there's an amended version, which I'll actually move as well. I'll move the one that appears on the screen now with the additional 7.2 slotted in red. Is there a seconder for that motion on the screen? Councillor Wood. Okay, so we're now at the pointy end of the budget process. We've had our 20 submissions. We have a 109-page report tonight dealing with those submissions. We've heard from 8 submitters tonight. We've heard from two other oral submitters previously. So it's a good, healthy level of engagement, 20 submissions, 10 oral presentations, and some interesting issues for us to mull over. I think that some of the extra pieces of disclosure in the report tonight are good. So if you go to pages, I think, 12 and 13 of the report, there's a first-time disclosure of the specific grants that we're giving to external bodies. So one example of that, we hadn't previously in the draft budget disclosed that we're giving $600,000 next year to the Melbourne Convention Bureau. So the officers have come up with a proposed extra piece of transparency on the payments to third parties, which I think is a good disclosure initiative, and I thank the officers for putting that one up. In terms of some of the specific submissions, with Kensington, I think, Jeff, obviously you and some of your fellow LAP swimmers have put an interesting case. I think Graham's point was quite strong in terms of we need to do this holistically when the broader redevelopment of Kensington comes. I would make the point that I think that overall we possibly need to do a bit more on capital and a bit less on recurrent, and that might create a bit more room for projects such as that. And if we had a 10-year visible capital works program that you could see, then there'd be a bit more direct information as to when in the future we might be contemplating a significant investment in the Kensington facility there. So I think you make the point well. The heating obviously is difficult when you've got different users, I think, but for now we're accepting the officer recommendation that this is part of a holistic plan going forward rather than a piecemeal response up front. There's also an interesting submission regarding helicopters, which I think the officers have declined to recommend that we put a new draft action to work up a specific policy on how we deal with the helipads in the helicopter industry. I just would signal that I think that is an issue we will at some point need to get to. I think that the officer position I will accept tonight, but there is ongoing discussions with the industry, and I know the state government is moving on this potentially as well. It is an issue, and I know that the helicopter industry is relatively silent in our transport plan at the moment, so it is one policy area we may need to look at. On the homelessness question, obviously there's been a lot of scrutiny and there's some serious issues there. We've had two submissions both come in which are similar, which are capital grants, and I think that as of tonight we can't obviously make a fast decision, but I do think there may be a case about an amendment to the budget, not tonight but down the track, once we have a further assessment of the various proposals, and obviously reflecting Councillor Wong's issue about granting to live applicants is potentially problematic in terms of our different roles as a responsible authority. Another important change from management is related to the Queen Victoria market. We historically have taken close to $5 million a year out of QVM in licence payments primarily, but also tax dividend equivalent dividend payments as well. And there's a proposal to reduce that by $1 million in this year's budget, so that under the new CEO, Malcolm McCulloch, there's a bit more capacity for QVM management to invest in the operation and success of the market. And this is arguably the most profitable market in the world in terms of what a shareholder landlord is taking from it. $5 million a year, $100 million over 20 years. Certainly think it's a strong case that we ease off on that as QVM goes through major reforms and renewal, and so that the new management team can reinvigorate and invest in the market. So I won't say too much more. I'm sure other councillors will want to say a few comments, but I'd like to thank our officers for diligently going through the submissions. Thank all our submitters. It's a good public process. Councillors only received the report about 24 hours ago, which was a little bit later than has occurred in previous years. So it has been a little bit tricky for us to get together and propose anything different. We haven't had a formal meeting together. So I would signal tonight that there may be the possibility of a couple of tweaks at the final budget approval meeting at the end of June, when we will have had a bit more time to discuss amongst ourselves and with officers some of the submissions, including potentially homelessness submissions as well. So, but in terms of tonight, I think the officer recommendation with Councillor Wood's addition is the way to go ahead. And I'd like to now invite the seconder, Councillor Wood, to say a few comments.
Thanks, Chair. I'm happy to support. I won't sort of go over your good synopsis of the submissions. Needless to say, though, that in some cases, even when submissions are sort of put to the budget, they may not be adopted in this budget, but certainly those good ideas tend to have a way of popping up later on as projects in their own right. So I think I would say thank you to all submitters as well for inputting directly into the process and allowing us to see those submissions. Specifically on 7.2, we're at the absolute full budget for the project itself. In fact, we've had many of the partners in the Melbourne Renewable Energy Project contribute over $100,000 to support the project in its own right. The $40,000 will hopefully match some grant funding that we've got underway at the moment, and that'll allow us to actually develop the model, the off-the-shelf model, which will replicate this project, and that's really going to be the success of the project. The Victorian Government has announced the Victorian Renewable Energy Target, 25% by 2020. The interesting and stretch target is the 40% by 2025, so there's going to be a lot of structural change in the energy market for Victoria, and City of Melbourne has seen since as early as 2002 that renewables and the focus on zero net emissions has been a strong one for us right across many different policy areas. So this allocation will ensure that we're able to develop that model, offer it up to partners from local government, from all sorts of business sectors, from the tertiary sector, to pick that up and hopefully run numerous group procurement tenders to buy renewable energy direct from the market and change Victoria's energy mix to make us a much more diverse energy supply into the future.
Thanks, Councillor Wood. Councillor Wong.
Thank you, Chair. Thank all the submissions. Reading them, there's a few key points I'd just maybe like to just touch on. I think it's very important that homelessness is front and centre. We all know that, and that we've been experiencing a number of issues in the city, through the city square and Enterprise Park, and over the years in Carlton Gardens and a number of other locations. And the organisations that we work with, City Mission and Salvation Army, which are the two closest, we've been, it's a struggle that I'm not sure whether there's actually a solution, but there are actions we can take to improve the situation, and I commend both the organizations on that. I think council will have a look at these in due course, but there's also the philanthropic side of things that I think nowadays, that because it's such a, as I say, front and center in everyone's discussion, that maybe we might get a lot more support out of that sector as well. The other submission that's very interesting is about the school and the city school. It's been going on since 2009 that this matter has been raised with us, and we have raised it with the state government, and it's always the state government responsibility to build a school. And after a number of reports, somehow they, if I may blunt, they turned the report into, oh, there's not enough people in Docklands, so we don't need a school. And so we're now changing it called a school for the city. It's not just a school for Docklands. The location is irrelevant. So I'm hoping that we will continue to push that part, and the representation from Dawn, I think that and others from the people of the what's it called, the group called Annette Sloan and the group City School for City. I think that's an important part. Tony, in your submission from South Bank residents, you mentioned about all the bike conflicts, but you didn't mention it there. And if you read the submissions, we're looking at this floating bike pontoon along the river, which for bicycles, for cycling.
Yeah, well, we only got 3 minutes, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, what I would just like to say that city design has been looking at this for a number of years. You know, I think there's issues with how all the conflicts are handled, the way the river is used, and so forth. But I'm hopeful that eventually we'll get to that point where we will have separation, because the current situation is not really working. So I do commend you for raising that issue, but it's top of our minds all the time. And there's the other one, Peter Topping, his issue about Melrose Street area. I think City Design's also looking at that, because that whole area is undergoing some major redevelopment, including the Woolworths that's coming up with a lot of apartments. So I think it's a real opportunity now to make that area even more pedestrian and community friendly. So I look forward to that, and I just thought it's worth mentioning that they brought that up.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Any other speakers to the motion? Okay. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you. Just want to add a few words just to add my thanks to yours, to officers for all the work on this process, and acknowledge the submissions. It's good to see so many. Not many of them have been translated into dollar figure changes. It's part of the report that we're considering. However, hopefully there's a few explanations made tonight, particularly on the Kensington Pool, which I was keen to pursue, as well as a couple of other issues. Boyd in particular, the report stating that the 28th of June council meeting will consider what direction to go into now, and so we cannot preempt here whether or not to provide extra funds, fewer funds for more or less open space as part of that process. We shouldn't be preempting that process. So I hope that some of the explanations around why we can't preempt those issues, those are just two, are accepted, or at least explain why I don't think we're in a position tonight to circumvent it. On the issue of homelessness, this is the most interesting issue to be discussed tonight. Of course, it's on every councillor's mind in recent months in particular, as the visibility of homelessness in the city is only on the increase. The city's own data is demonstrating that to devastating effect just in recent weeks. And I guess I echo the words of the mover of this motion that it's difficult to make a decision here and now. Councillor Ong's also pointed out that there are a few perceived, if not real, conflict of interest issues that arise when considering issues of capital grants. So it would be inappropriate, I believe, to amend the budget here and now, or seek to amend the budget here and now, to identify any external organisation that should be the recipient of Capital Works grants. However, as Councillor Main has pointed out, there is two more weeks to go, and it is an issue that I know that all councillors are very serious about addressing. I'm sure management will be in a position as well over the next couple of weeks to provide any additional information that needs to be required. One of the submissions that was made, of course, hasn't had that management filter go over it yet, so I'm keen to get a response to that one as well. So this isn't the end point for that issue by any stretch of the imagination. Tonight, considering all other issues, though, I think we're arriving at a good place, and thanks to officers for helping us get here.
Thanks, Councillor Levitt. Any other speakers? Councillor Oak.
I could have spoken on all of the issues that yourself and Councillor Leppard and Ong have mentioned, but I probably should just speak on the helicopters and the helipads. With respect to the transport strategy, I have had conversations today about where to for the next transport strategy. We're kind of in the middle of the transport strategy at the moment, so it's not that we need to revise it at the moment, but it's certainly conversations about transport in the city are happening on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. Things are changing all the time. We've got big projects coming up, so I think it's important to raise as part of the conversation as we think about how to refresh transport strategy, and so it's good to have it on the mix. Otherwise, I support the recommendation.
Any other speakers? Just in conclusion, this will be our final submissions process of a four-year term, councillors. I think the equivalent meeting 4 years ago, there was a $500,000 spend on Gipps Street median strip. I think Tree-lined Street in East Melbourne was the big amendment that time. Clearly, this time, I think homelessness is the issue that is front and centre. And as Councillor Leppard has signalled, there may well be an opportunity down the track on that issue. I'd just like to conclude by saying that it is a very transparent process, this. So the 109 report, it went up on the web yesterday, but it will sit there forever. So it's there. The submitters, their work is there. We have heard from people tonight, from submitters tonight. The audio is also on the web, so there's a good public transparency around that. I actually tried submitting to another council through their budget process recently and wasn't able to find my submission on their website or listen to the debate, and it was a very unsatisfactory process. So I was quite proud of the transparency around City of Melbourne when not many councils do these basic things like audio on webs, and many councils actually drop the ball on this particular submissions process. Maintaining the normal transparency on the submissions process often drops away. So it's good that we are doing that. We didn't quite match it with our normal 5 days of notice, with the report only coming out yesterday, but the officers were under the pump, obviously, with time pressures and dealing with a very bulky 109-page report and individually responding to every submission, which is a very forensic and respectful process that our excellent officers do to all submissions. So I think it's been a good process. It's very transparent. We may have a final chapter at the end of June, but for the purposes of tonight, I think we should endorse the officer report with Councillor Wood's amendment. So we'll put that to the vote. All councillors in favour? Declare that one carried unanimously, and we'll hand that back to the Lord Mayor to complete the meeting.
Thank you. This concludes the business to be considered at this special meeting. I want to thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest in attendance, and declare the special meeting closed at 6:17 p.m.